Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Zomato Limited earnings conference call. From Zomato's management team, we have Mr. Deepinder Goyal, Founder and Chief Executive Officer, and Mr. Akshant Goyal, Chief Financial Officer, with us on the call today. Before we begin, a few quick announcements for the attendees. Anything said on this call which reflects our outlook for the future or which could be construed as a forward-looking statement may involve risks and uncertainties. Such statements or comments are not guarantees of future performance, and actual results may differ from those statements. All participant lines will be in the listen-only mode. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Akshant Goyal from Zomato. Thank you, and over to you, Mr. Akshant.
Thank you, moderator. Hello, everyone. Deepinder and I welcome you to this call. We hope you all got a chance to go through our shareholder letter that we shared yesterday, and we also hope you like the new format. We both are here to answer any incremental questions that you may have, which we may not have covered in the letter. With that, I request the moderator to please take the first question.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. We will unmute your line and take your questions in the respective sequence within the scheduled time. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Chirag Shah from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for taking my question at the outset. Also, thanks for the interactive format of the shareholder communication. Indeed, very useful. I was hoping to understand what proportion of incremental customer acquisition is organic. I would assume that majority of it would have moved in favor of organic. And if that is true, what is the impact that we see on the overall CAC and A&P spending going forward, especially in the context that we now have presence across 1,000 cities covered?
Yeah. Hi, Chirag. Thank you for the question. So I think one context here for our business, so we did not start as a food delivery business. We already had a thriving dining out listings business in India, which meant that even when we started our food delivery business 4 or 5 years ago, a large portion of our new users for food delivery were actually organic, right? And that percentage has actually increased over time as a presence, as a brand has become much wider in the country. And a large portion, I would say majority, more than 50% of our new users every quarter are still organic. Which means our CAC, we believe, is lower as compared to platforms who are standalone food delivery players or who don't have the legacy as a brand or a business that we enjoy in this country, and they continue to trend in a downward direction, year on year, which overall makes the economics going forward healthier and in a way leading to the improvement that we have seen in the overall P&L in our business in the last 3-4 years.
Sure. My next question is to Deepinder. As we look for adding adjacencies to our core food delivery business, what are the thoughts on the super app structure that some of your peers seem to be pursuing versus the app within the app structure that we seem to be looking forward to? Just your thoughts on the overall customer experience, brand association between the two models?
Shirat, so we haven't seen the super app work in India so far yet. And I think the jury is still out whether super apps will work or super brands will work. So we are still figuring it out, I would say.
Understand. Actually, I have more questions. Can I go ahead with my questions, moderator, or should I go back in the queue?
Sir, I request you to rejoin the question queue.
Sure, I will do that. Thank you. Thank you, Deepinder and Akshant. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vivek Maheshwari from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. My first question is on the letter talks about, in no uncertain terms, about the focus on reduction in losses as well as accelerated growth. Is it that easy to balance the two at this point of time, given that for incremental customer you still need to have subsidies out there, and if you don't do that, then basically balancing the two, how easy or difficult it is? Because I think the letter clearly talks about focus on profitability as well as, or reduction in losses as well as accelerated growth.
So we were actually, in this business, losses reduce because of growth, right? Because as portion of your business, which is, there's a segment of your customer base which is profitable, and as that portion grows, your contribution, overall contribution dollars start to swell, right? So I think as we grow faster, actually it becomes easier for us to reduce our losses because operating leverages kick in. And their scale benefits and economies of scale in the business as well. So we don't see that necessarily being a choice that we have to make all the time, especially at the current scale of our business. And last couple of quarters, we've seen business grow sequentially, quarter on quarter, while the losses have come down. And we expect the same trend to continue from at least from where we are today and what we see on the ground today.
Okay, and a follow-up to that, Akshant, how different this is from then FY 2018, 2019, 2020, when you were growing very rapidly and the losses were also swelling? Do you think the scale is now right for you to derive operating leverage? Because I would have imagined if you still want to get the nth customer onto your platform, you will still need subsidies, right? Which will mean that you still need to incur a fairly, high amount of cash burn. So, and particularly you will go down the curve, right? So to speak, the premium customer is already there on the platform. So the incremental customer will be dilutive, plus you will need more subsidies to get him or her on the platform.
So Vivek, FY 2018, 2019, we were just starting off our business, right? And I would say at that time, the share of orders that we get from new users on our platform every month was way higher than what it is today. Today, more than 90% of our business in a month is actually from repeat users. So, and back in FY 2018, 2019, because it was largely every month about acquiring more users, which were new to the category, we had to spend money on acquiring them and then also making sure that we incentivize them to make a repeat order on our platform and create that habit and ecosystem that we wanted to. I think where we are today, the overall scale of customer base on our platform is now meaningful enough that even at a healthy new user addition pace, majority of our business is repeat, where we don't spend money on subsidies, right? Where people are coming to our platform for the convenience and assortment that they get, a choice they get, and that business actually doesn't is not required to be subsidized.
To add more color to this, here, I think most of the growth over the next couple of years will come from repeat frequency going up, rather than us getting a lot of new customers onto the platform.
While in absolute terms, it's interesting because we're still acquiring more new users every month than we've ever done in our life, right? So when we started in FY18, we started from zero, right? But we were acquiring, let's say, 500,000 new users a month. Today, we are underrating 3-4x of that, right? So our new user addition in absolute terms has actually grown over the last 2-4 years. But their share or in our monthly business has gone down because of a very high repeat customer base. I hope you're able to make sense here.
Right. So just to conclude, basically, you are saying that from a GOV standpoint, the frequency will go up, on a percentage basis, much more than the new users that you will be getting onto the platform.
Yes, that's correct. And when we say frequency, we actually look at it more from an annual frequency more than monthly frequency, right? Our penetration of monthly transacting users as compared to manual transacting users right now very low. So as you would have seen in our data, that we have about 50 million annual transacting customers, but of that only 15 million order every month. So as more people order every month, we expect our annual frequency to go up multiple times from where we are today, for which we don't intend to spend money on subsidies or discounts.
Got it. And my second and last question, can you just talk about the Blinkit to the extent you can? And I mean, the press release just talk about hyperlocal, you know, and your intent to participate in that. But given how the market is crowded, the full stack grocery baskets, you know, are not able to, you know, break even at the current levels and all the dynamics in India in terms of MRP and all. How do you, why is such an obsession with grocery and what is your, you know, expectation from this business if you take a 2-3-5 year view?
So, Vivek, first of all, I think it's not just grocery. I think we look at it as a broader commerce play. Grocery could be one of the categories that customers purchase on our platform if we talk about the quick commerce business. And I'm here not talking about Blinkit, I'm just talking of our philosophy on quick commerce and why we think it's attractive. Right. I think in the past, whenever in India at least, the online grocery space has run in a particular format, which you are questioning right now whether it will work ever or not, given you are saying that these businesses have not broken even. But we are approaching it differently, where the distribution model here is actually not centralized warehouses, but they are actually local micro warehouses, dark stores. And we are using our existing capabilities on the hyperlocal delivery side to be able to deliver some of these products to customers within a few minutes, right? So I think while the product being sold to customers is still grocery, but the manner in which we are doing is different, and the capabilities that we already have are also different. So it's not very like-to-like in my mind. And more importantly, I think right now the online penetration on grocery is so small in the country, we don't think of it as us taking share away from existing incumbents, right? I think there's so much to grow in terms of penetration. So the market is very, very large, and it's too early to worry about competition here. I think our guiding principles here are that we want to be efficient with the capital here. And in the past, we have demonstrated that. You know, we've been more capital efficient while building our food delivery business as compared to anyone else in India. And we'll keep that same principle in mind and keep building this business, because we do believe that our existing business gives us the right to win and build a much larger business, which will also create a much more defensible business in the long term for us.
So just to follow up, Akshant, on this, because this is one point which, you know, a lot of investors are talking about in today's conversations as well, which is basically, if you look at the supply side, the neighborhood stores, you know, the mom and pop kirana that India has, number one, and number two, the use case for a 10 to, let's say, 30 minutes delivery, and the number of players who are here. Do you think that, you know, the market is right to acquire, you know, or Blinkit or whatever, whichever form you will ultimately do this, particularly on the inorganic side, given that the market is far more competitive, and I don't know if the use cases are as much to justify the number of players that we have in this space. So what happens next? Is it consolidation, or because it looks very difficult, you know, at least to me as an analyst, you know, how will you make money in the medium term, given you know, the kind of competition plus the neighborhood store, which is a very efficient system in India? Thank you.
Sure, Vivek. So appreciate that. I think, and look, we went through the same cycle and journey on our food delivery business when we had same questions that we were posing to ourselves back then. And now, of course, there are other shareholders who think about the company also. So eventually we do think there is a market, and this is a model which actually is more efficient than the kirana model, and that's why it will work, right? Because reliably delivering groceries or few other products in minutes is not something which kirana offers even in India, right? So while you know, they are efficient, they are lean cost structures, but the consistency of service that we are aiming to provide here to customers through the quick commerce that we are thinking about is in our minds going to beat that experience. And I think that's the only scenario under which it will grow and it will really play out. And, you know, M&A, buy, build versus buy, is of course a separate debate, and we're not getting into that right now. But idea is that as long as we're paying a fair value for what we are buying, then that should be okay with everyone.
Sure. Wish you all the best.
Thank you, Vivek.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sachin Salgaonkar from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for the opportunity. My first question is an extension on the quick commerce. So Akshant, would like to hear from you, how do you guys look at the unit economics at this business? And, you know, especially given the point that you mentioned about consistency of service is important. So what kind of investments one should largely look from a warehousing and logistics purpose?
So, yeah, so I think here, in addition to, if you compare this to food delivery business, then there's an additional element of having a back-end supply system which supplies to these dark stores. And then we, of course, fulfill them through the last-mile delivery fleet that we have, right? And we have to look at the business here overall, therefore, as a package in terms of some capex that we may need to do and some operating losses that we need to fund. And make sure that over time we see a line of sight to this getting profitable on a unit economics perspective, right? So I think too early for us to give you color on you know, specific unit economics levers here and how they are trending. We don't have the data or not authorized to share the data with you right now because the only access we have is to Blinkit data as a shareholder. Right, but at some point in time, I think you know, once we get into this business, then we'll be happy to provide you more color on this.
Okay, thanks. And you know, I remember in your you know, previous quarter results, you had mentioned a chart saying that you know there is one core business to start off with, and in second years there will be a second core, and eventually in the longer term there would be other cores. And just staying on that point, does this essentially mean that, you know, any potential acquisition in a, you know, quick commerce business is at least a year away, or, you know, this turning a core is 1 year away, as you had mentioned earlier?
So no definite timeline in our head, Sachin. I think we'll take it as it comes, and we don't necessarily need to acquire every business that we invest in also. I think some of the investments are done with the objective of working closely with these companies and strategically aligning with them over going forward. So so yeah, as of now, I think we will take it as it comes. If and when we need to, I mean, if there's a reasonable case for doing M&A versus not.
Got it. You know, second question is, you know, you guys had mentioned that currently there are no plans on making any more minority investments. But the existing companies might need more capital. So is it fair to assume that on a proportionate basis, as and how, when these companies look capital, you guys will inject in that?
I think most of these companies are doing really well. We don't think there is an imminent need for raising money in these companies. I mean, as far as we know, you know, and we take a call if we come to that point when these companies are raising funds on whether we want to maintain our pro rata stake or not, or even letting the round go, right? So we're open to that. We haven't decided on that yet because we haven't come across, or at least we don't believe that these companies are at this point looking to raise capital.
Okay. Third question is, just wanted to understand the impact of higher inflation on your business, both on wage inflation for gig economy workers as well as any impact on demand.
Sachin, it's very hard to actually be able to isolate the impact of these things, right? I think what we are seeing in business that overall, what we are seeing in our business is that the business continues to grow and cost is still coming down. But I do believe that there are definitely some headwinds here on inflation which would be impacting consumer demand. But notwithstanding that, we are still seeing the business grow, which is great. And on the cost side as well, yes, I mean, there is a pressure because of the fuel price increases. We talked about that in our letter also. But we've recently seen Government of India give some relief on that. So hopefully that should further help us on our profitability journey.
Thanks. And last is a bookkeeping question. What all goes into unallocated costs?
So these are, so as we mentioned also in the table, these are essentially server and tech infra costs. These are corporate salaries and corporate overheads. These are costs which are not allocable to any business that we run.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ankur Rudra from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hey, thank you for doing the call and also for the additional disclosures this quarter. We would obviously love to have some more on a regular basis, so a bit more higher frequency. The questions I had were on contribution margins to start off with. If you think about the relationship on a structural basis between the delivery costs for Zomato as a platform, earnings for delivery partners, and external costs outside of the control like fuel and social security costs, as the platform matures, what's the level of control you have over this and how do you see this evolve?
So, Ankur, essentially, so if we are in a steady state, you know, I think the response to this question would be different. But where we are today in our journey, if you, let's say, look at a specific neighborhood, right, and how we see this evolving in a particular neighborhood, if we take that example, is that over time, the order density is going to go up, right, which essentially means that the that neighborhood will mature in terms of there being more restaurants and there being more customers who are ordering from those restaurants, which will lead to more orders within that small neighborhood. That will drive, that will essentially lower the delivery radius. We can, right? Because right now we have in some localities and most localities, the delivery radius are way more than what we would ideally like to have or what we see in future. And as that happens, where the order density in a neighborhood is going up and the delivery radius is going down, the delivery cost will come down massively because the delivery cost largely today are per order payout to delivery partners is a function of distance they travel. So as that happens, the savings that we make from where we are today are going to be meaningful and some of that we would share with our delivery partners so that their earnings also go up from what they are today, right? So I think we are on a journey or a stage where we are on that journey today, Ankur. And so from here on, I think there is a long way before we get to a place where some of these impact will have to directly pass to customers to stay at the same place from a cost perspective.
Okay, as a follow-up to the contribution margin question and on a broader basis, I think in your investor letter, you highlighted that the levers for higher contribution margins to double digits, the journey to double digits include restaurant commission rates, ad sales, and delivery charges. Could you talk about how you see this go up across the platform? Zomato, I feel, has one of the highest merchant take rates globally, and also you'll probably be more successful over ad sales and customer delivery charges. So how do you see this evolve over the next 3 to 5 years to achieve your double digit aspiration?
So I think, first of all, we don't think that we don't agree with the comment that you made that we have the highest commission rates globally on food. I think our understanding is that, take rates, for example, in US are close to 25-30%. I think you may be getting confused because of how some of the metrics are reported in different countries. So, for example, revenue is reported differently, net of discounts in US, which could give an impression that the take rates are lower. But if you will talk to restaurants there, the take rates are north of 25%. Right? So I think, therefore, we think that's not a factor and that's not a comparison we think is valid. And in general, I think when we talk about revenue, whether it is commission rates, what we get from restaurants or customer delivery charges, it's a function of what value we are bringing to these stakeholders, right? And as long as we continue increasing that value to the customer or to the restaurant, we expect the willingness of the other side to pay us more over time. And that's what you've seen in the last 3-4 years, where our revenue per order has grown consistently. And even if you compare the last 4-5 quarters, it's been trending well. And going forward as well, that's the expectation, that it's up to us on how we drive convenience for our customers, how we drive growth for our restaurant partners. And if we are able to do that job well, then we don't see any challenges in them willing to pay us more for this service.
Thank you. Just a quick question on the quick commerce side. There's been some discussion so far. But the broader point for me seems like you're defining yourself as a hyper-local business with an intention to diversify beyond food. I'm just curious, is this a relatively new realization or was it always a plan? And also, how does this impact your EBITDA, positive expectations over the next 2 or 3 years?
Sorry, Ankur, I didn't get your first part of the question. Can you repeat that?
Yeah, so the first one, the question was on the hyperlocal side. This is you I think defined recently yourself as a hyperlocal business in the recent investor letter, beyond this food delivery. I was curious about, is this something you always wanted to do in the last 2 or 3 years? Is this a more recent thing? Because earlier it was food and grocery, which was still around the food, like the ecosystem. This seems, you know, beyond that from your comments as well.
No, so I think our last 3-4 years were largely about building the food delivery ecosystem in India, right, and building this business first. And we've gone through a journey where there was hyper competition, where there were questions on economics of this business, whether it will be sustainable or not. So for sure, I think we did not start food delivery with the mindset of building a quick commerce business 3 years down the line. I think the thought process has evolved as we have seen food delivery settle down into a large industry and market with compelling economics. And now as we think of a future forward in terms of what we can build on top of what we have and where do we have the right to win, we think quick commerce is a great adjacency for us in that respect.
But over the last few years, we have always been thinking about that these are the moats that we have and what can we do with the moats that we have. Hyperpure business is also one of those businesses that we built based on the strength that we already had. So I think the concept has been around for the last few years, but the specificity of like quick commerce is maybe a couple of years old.
Appreciate that, Colin. Last question, just on the EBITDA target, or let's say, you know, turning EBITDA positive as a group. Maybe I can merge the question. Basically, do you think the potential foray into quick commerce, and you highlighted $400 million investment, which could include losses, would that push out the break-even for the company compared to what you thought before? And also a related one is, you know, this $400 million is, I think you've said CY22-23, we're already halfway through CY22. So will it be effectively 400 divided by 18-19, so approximately $20 million burn for the next, you know, on a monthly basis for the next 18 months, actually?
So, Ankur, the way we think about it is that, look, we have a cash balance in the bank today, right? And we want to get the company to profitability without diluting anymore. I think that's how we're thinking about it. That with the current $1.6 billion that we have in the bank, we should get to a profitable business on an aggregate basis, as you define it, on a group basis, right? Now, with that, we don't necessarily feel the need to get to group profitability sooner by not doing quick commerce. I don't think that will be the right way to think about doing or not doing that business. I think as long as our food delivery business is increasingly becoming profitable and we are seeing and we are allocating a reasonable budget for our foray into quick commerce as and when we do it, and we remain within these sort of binding when this framework of being capital efficient, then I think a few quarters of here and there in terms of getting to a bit of break even at a group level is fine. That's how we think about it.
Okay, appreciate the color. Thank you.
Welcome, Ankur.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Garima Mishra from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. Can you please highlight the differences in customer behavior that you witness between your operations in, let's say, metro and tier 1 cities versus other cities? And is the LTV CAC equation significantly superior for tier 1 customers?
Hi, Garima. So, you know, in terms of customer behavior, of course, I think in more larger cities or metro cities, specifically within that, also in more affluent or densely populated neighborhoods, the order frequency is higher, right, of customers. The order values are also higher. So that gradation is there, and it's not necessarily a function of different cities, but within cities also that variation exists. Eventually, as you rightly said, it's a function of CAC to LTV, and that's how we measure. And there, of course, are some cities where you have to take a long-term LTV CAC to view, right? Because currently those cities are or neighborhoods are not profitable, so there is no LTV in a way. But I think what we watch is that how are those cities or neighborhoods trending in terms of some of these underlying customer demographics, how are the number of restaurants in growing in those neighborhoods because of our presence or post our presence. And as long as these trends are in the right direction, we think it makes sense to be continue to be present in these cities and at contribution margins which are not way south. And over time, we see the contribution margin improving, and that which is what we have seen even in our larger cities. So I think that's how we sort of think about it.
Okay, understood. And for FY22, is there any quantification that you may help us understand with as to what was the growth of these top few cities, or let's say top 10 or top 20 cities, whichever way you segregate it internally, versus some of the other cities in the mix?
So Garimal, of top 8 cities is 60% of our business, right? So our overall business cannot grow without these cities growing. And, you know, we haven't shared or don't want to share specific data on the growth rate of these cities, but suffice it to say that they're growing at a pretty healthy rate, which is not very different from our average growth rate right now.
Understood. And I think you alluded to some of your other businesses early on in the call. So can you highlight the progress that you're making on your restaurant subscriptions, Zomato Pro, Hyperpure businesses, and how long before these businesses can become profitable at a segmental level?
Yeah, so you know, our dining out business is profitable even now, although it's very small in scale and size today, and the focus there is to get the scale back that we had pre-COVID, which we lost in COVID because of dining out becoming irrelevant in India for almost 2 years. So I think that business is already there and profitable. And I think, as we mentioned in our letter, we're working on a product update there, and we hope to scale profitably going forward in that business. Hyperpure, again, we've covered that in the letter, growing nicely. We are behind the investment phase in terms of expanding into new cities, and we're now every quarter seeing the margins improving in that business. And I mean, the focus on profitability there is no different than food delivery, and we expect to make progress every quarter going forward.
Right. Thank you so much, and wish you the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mukul Garg from Motilal Oswal Financial Services. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good evening, guys. Just two questions from my side. You know, Dipinder, I just wanted to understand on profitability side, you know, how should we see the correlation between order frequency, commission rate, and order density? You know, you guys just spoke about it. Because when you see, you know, the when do you see the benefit of operating leverage actually start playing in them? If I look at, you know, your growth this year, growth was very good. You also added about 40% more restaurants over last 2 years, which should help with your density. But the frequency as well as order density continue to remain very flattish over last 3 years. So how should we see them grow in the next 3 to 5 years?
So I think it's a good question, Mukul. I think you're referring to the annual order frequency, right?
That's correct.
Referring to our annual order frequency, yes. So yeah, so see, that's the point that I was making earlier, that our current annual order frequency is about 10 times a year, right, which is not even once a week, right? I mean, getting to once a week is about 50 times a year. And if you refer to our Q3 shareholder letter, we had shared a data point on in terms of number of people who are ordering at least once a week on our platform. And that number is a small 1.8 million. This was as of December last year. And that's where I think, to our earlier point, the growth opportunity is in terms of increasing frequency. Because, you know, of the 50 million people today, 1.8 million people are ordering once a week, right? That number going up to 10, 15, 20 million people will mean a meaningful growth in our business, you know, without even really acquiring any new user, theoretically. And that's the opportunity that we're excited about.
So, just to follow up on this, you know, is there any benchmark or any, you know, thought process which you guys have? How should we see the growth both in order frequency as well as the density part? Because, you know, what I see right now is that the delivery boy per ride is not even taking, you know, on an average one order. So how should we see these metrics grow over
over the medium term?
So Mukul, that's what I said. I think we expect the frequency, average annual frequency, to grow up from 10 times we have to ideally 40-50 at least, for a much larger number of users than we currently have. And on your second point, I think if I'm not wrong, you are referring to the utilization or efficiency of the delivery fleet, where you're referring to number of orders they're delivering per hour. And that number actually is north of 1 right now. So it's, I just wanted to correct you that it's close to 1.5 or north of that. And that's a driver of a delivery cost per order. I think as that metric goes up, which goes up with density of orders, we will see the delivery cost come down.
Sure. The second question was on the competitive intensity in the food delivery space. How should we see that, from a medium to long-term perspective? Will it be a scenario that you and Swiggy will have, pretty much equal market share with little to differentiate the two companies? Or, do you see clear differentiation which Zomato is driving, which can move the needle in terms of market share?
I think, Mukul, you should tell us that. Speculative, like, we don't know how this will pan out. I think we essentially look at what we are doing internally. We obsess with customer service. We obsess with our NPS of delivery partners and restaurant partners, and I think market share is an outcome of that. So it's a large and competitive market, offline, and we choose. So it's essentially something that we don't worry about too much. It's an outcome for us rather than something that we want to drive.
And that's fair. Thanks for taking my question. I'll get back into this here.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhishek Bhandari from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Hi, Vipinder and Akshan. Thank you for the detailed letter. I had two questions. One, Akshan, if you can, just correct me here. If I add your adjusted EBITDA and your, the contribution margin, I come to a total, cost of around 1,300 odd crore for FY22. Now, understandably, the adjusted EBITDA is variable in nature, the losses of that. Could you help out of this 450 of company level overhead, how much is variable and how much is fixed? And a related question is, while you explained, Dipinder spoke about a medium-term path to profitability, but do you guys have any timeline, on your core food part, excluding your quick commerce foray, where you think, your adjusted EBITDA at group level could start turning zero?
Sorry, can you just repeat your first question? Are you referring to the unallocated cost in the adjusted EBITDA and your question with regards to how much of that is variable or fixed related to that?
Yeah, you can explain that way. That's fine. You can explain that way, yeah.
Yeah, so I think most of it, the server and tech infra cost, I would say, is semi-variable, right? Because as we scale, we have to spend more on that. But outside of that, I would say they're largely fixed. And these costs grow with inflation pretty much right now. We're not looking to add meaningful number of employees going forward. I think we are well-staffed. So these costs, therefore, should be looked upon as fixed costs largely, and hence the operating leverage that we spoke about is what is going to play out even further as we go forward.
Okay. So could you share some timeline around, your internal vision of, taking it EBITDA neutral business on the core food and hyperlocal, excluding the hyperlocal part.
We don't have any timelines for this. We are actually operating on an as soon as possible mode.
Let me ask you another way. If I heard you correctly, you said that you have enough money of $1.6 billion, which is enough for you to eventually turn the business profitable. So should we think that is the kind of burn you're looking before we could start seeing that EBITDA print?
No, not at all.
We want to hold as much cash as possible, and we're not going to spend all of it. No way.
Okay, sure. Got it.
Or even most of it.
Okay, that's good to hear. So, Akshan, the second question is, at multiple times in the letter, you've written that the core focus is, top cities. And I think you also mentioned, most of the frequency increases is going to be the incremental demand driver or the growth driver. So I'm just curious, why expand so dramatically into new markets now, doesn't it take away your bandwidth and rather you focus more on, you know, driving up some of the, you know, frequency in the mature market, because it seems that tier one markets are maturing rapidly for you?
So Abhishek, this is a very scalable product or category, right? I mean, once we have this in X number of cities, launching this in another 1x or 2x or 3x actually doesn't take away bandwidth. It's the same system that we are taking to newer markets. And in fact, more data points makes the system, the overall business more robust, to my mind. So we're not, compromising on tension here or level of commitment to larger cities when we expand to smaller cities, both in terms of our time as well as, our balance sheet. And what we have also seen in the last 2-3 years, when we expanded from the first 10-15 cities that we were in to the next 500, that some of these cities now within the top 100 are getting to unit economics positive in a meaningful way and much larger than in size than what they were when we launched them 3 years ago. So the thesis is that, you know, the similar journey is going to play out in cities number 500 to 1,000, and, you know, as I said, there's no incremental cost of expanding and launching and being there first, I think, gives us the first mover advantage. So that's how we think about this.
Sure. And my last question, Dipender, is, if I look at most of the global, food delivery companies, even if, those are working in a developed market like US, where people have the habit of paying convenience fees, and as you said, take rates are much materially higher, yet those companies are probably not, turning profitable, or they don't have, a near-term visibility of turning profitable. So what gives us the confidence that, our path to profitability will be sooner than later and we won't burn the entire money what we have?
I think what gives us the confidence is that we actually don't look at them here. We just look at our own business and we know that we will get there. So,
but by the way, I think Abhishek, DoorDash is profitable now. And so
I don't even know
Uber
that.
Eats or Uber, right? So these businesses are now turning profitable.
But we know our business really well. We will get there.
Okay. Good to hear that, guys, and all the best, and hope, we keep the interaction going at the public level in coming quarter. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question is from the lineup. Vijit Jain from Citi. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Good evening, Dipender, Akshant. Thanks for doing this call. My first question is, with the, you had a GOV retention trend chart in the the DRHP, RHP for FY 2017-18-19, do you have an update for what those cohorts look like in terms of GMV retention in FY 2022? That's my first question.
So, Vijay, that trend continues. We haven't shared that data because we felt that there is no incremental value to sharing that data beyond what all of you already have from the disclosures we had in the RHPs. So that trend continues, and we are seeing over time a set of customer orders more on our platform every year. And that number keeps growing, which means that as a business, we compound with just the same set of customers, right? Which is a point we are repeating a number of times on this call. But I think that's the character of this business, where the compounding is really strong once customers get used to the platform.
Yeah, sure. And my next question is, when you look at some of the marketing expenses, obviously part of it is above contribution and part of it is below. Are all discounts above contribution margin, or do you account for the absolute new users somewhat differently?
No. So all our discounts are above contribution, and in our parlance, we call marketing spends as money that we spend on digital marketing, ATL, right, or any other channel that we spend money on acquiring customers. So that amount is below contribution, and all the discounts and subsidies are accounted for in the contribution.
Sure, thanks. And just one final question from my side. With the, with this expansion into about 600, 700 odd cities this year, can you give a sense of what is the cost structure like for running some of these cities? As in, some of these cities may be subscale, you may have very few orders in them, but is there a tangible cost that you're incurring in just being live in those cities?
So, Vijay, we keep iterating on this. I mean, we don't report it, but there are a number of cities which we pull out of when we see that nothing is panning out in those cities and there is no sense in continuing to be present. So, the number that we report in terms of the cities that we added is net addition, right, in a way, because there are some cities that we pulled out of. So we look at individual, therefore, city P&L regularly, and as long as we feel the investment in that city is within a certain bound and it's making sense in terms of how the ecosystem in that city is growing, then we sort of continue with that city, otherwise you pull out.
Sure, thanks. And one last question on the dining out business. This quarter, dining out business would have been in general back, right? So is it that, you know, this is post-COVID recovery and people are going back into restaurants in any way? Restaurants are full and so restaurants are maybe not spending as much as they would have before on advertising on your platform. Is that what is happening in your view, or is there more to what you need to do in terms of product update there?
I think it's both, Vijit. So over the last 2 years, I think perhaps October-December last year was the quarter when we for the first time saw the dining out market in India really coming back in full scale. But again, as you said, the restaurants were then full. But we still made a meaningful progress in terms of some of the revenues in that business for us coming back. Now, we saw a pullback again in Q4 because of Omicron in January, which meant that restaurants again were shut in that quarter for a decent period of time. And we'll see how it goes, going forward. But to our mind, I think over the last 2 years, because Zomato has been now associated as a primarily food delivery brand in consumers' mind, we believe that we need a product refresh and upgrade to bring that association back in consumers' mind, and that's the work that we're doing on our side, while we still wait for full recovery on dining out from a restaurant's remaining open standpoint.
Got it. Great. Thank you so much. Those are my questions.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Hiren Dasani from Goldman Sachs Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hi, Dipinder and Akshant. Thanks for doing this call. So generally, I'll take a high level. The three criticism, which at least we have heard the most about Zomato as an investment, is A, you guys are not focused on profitability, B, you guys don't interact enough, and C, you guys have some crazy capital allocation policy. And hopefully on all the three, with the disclosures you have made and today's call, there should be some meaningful incremental progress. I just wanted to ask you a question on the last part of the capital allocation and referring to question 28 and 29 in your release. So, $150 million of short-term loan, is that, first of all, already given out or that yet to be given out?
Part of it is given out today. Part of it is pending. We'll see if they need it. I mean, we've essentially committed to it, but whether we really give them the money or not is a function of whether they need it or not.
Okay. And thanks for your question 29, effectively, are you saying that the business plan of BlendShift means that the eventual $400 million total loss funding should be sufficient to get them to the path to profitability, or you think beyond that, the cash infusion will be required at the BlendShift level?
So it is very hard to look beyond 2 years in this business right now. I think, in fact, I would say very hard to even look even for the next 2 years and put a number out. But we thought we should do that given the questions we are getting, as you rightly said, on quick commerce. And even on this call, there have been a lot of questions raised on viability of that business. So I think, this is where we are today, where we feel comfortable that, this should be an upper bound given what we know as variables today and the knowledge and information that we have. But I think we'll keep updating the group and everyone, you know, as we get new information or data points as we go along.
Okay. And you know, also the fact that if at all you decide to kind of acquire a controlling stake there, right? And you also have to think about the valuations of the entire tech consumer internet space, how they have kind of come out since the last round of funding of Blinkit. How are you thinking on those lines, and if you need to do that, or you are saying at this point of time that we may not even go down that route?
So, Hiren, I don't want to comment specifically on Blinkit because there is nothing definitive that we have to share on that front. So far, it's just a financial investment for us. You know, but I mean, answering this question theoretically for any M&A that we do, right, I think, yeah, we are value conscious. We don't want to overpay, right? So we haven't done that in the past for any deal that we've done. So we'll follow the same principles, and we have a strong and independent board, and we run a strong governance process for any M&A, not just on valuation, but also on other things, on the rights we are getting in the business and so on. So we'll follow the same process here. We have that muscle well built here, and you know, we're not going to make any mistake on that front.
I appreciate that. Thank you, and wish you all the very best.
Thank you, Ren.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we are extending the call by 15 minutes. We'll take the next question from the line of Sudhir Guntupalli from Kotak Mahindra AMC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks guys for giving the opportunity. And just extending the debate, one of the previous analysts started on the obsession with quick commerce. Grocery delivery as a concept has been at least as old as food delivery, if not older. And these companies like Blinkit have been around since 2013-14, and they were not really able to scale up, flip-flop down the strategy multiple times, shut down the business in multiple formats. In fact, Mr. Albinder Dhindsa once made a comment that same-day delivery has no use case in India. Now, there is a U-turn in the stance with this concept of 10-minute delivery. So just to, if you take a step back and look at it, is it like a solution looking for a problem and it's a mere fad which can die down after some time? I'm talking about the overall industry as a, and a concept as a whole, not specific reference to Blinkit.
Suresh, yeah. You know, we've also had our U-turns on grocery, online grocery as a business, right?
Twice.
So, in fact, you know, before our IPO, interestingly, it was the other way around. Everyone used to pester us for getting into that business, but we could not see any light at the end of the tunnel, and not on economics, but largely on the product market fit from a consumer standpoint, as you pointed out. Right, and we've tried therefore twice on our platform, we shut it down. I think what changed this time is, as I mentioned, you know, when we looked at this business in context of quicker delivery than what was earlier the case, even quicker than food in some times, the PMF changed, and you know, the customer value proposition became much stronger than Kirana's for the first time, I guess, in the last 7-8 years in this industry. And hence, you know, if we, for example, take a city where the GMVs in online grocery were stagnating for last 5-7 years, they are today multiple times of the GMV that we have seen in those cities or neighborhoods today. So we've therefore, I think, you know, our first problem to overcome, our first hurdle to overcome when we think of this industry is there a large enough market? I think we think there is in this format. And then we come to the second question of whether this is a sustainable business from an economic standpoint. We're also increasingly over the last 12 months, as we've seen some of these businesses progress, and also the fact that we have a large food delivery business, which is synergistic, makes us confident that you know, economics will work here, and there is a large enough market out there which could be accretive to the profits in our business in the long term.
To add to that, yeah, I think customer cohorts for the quick commerce businesses are very, very good. So that is the product market fit there. Some of these customer cohorts are better than the food business that we have.
So it's not like necessarily a problem or an answer looking for a problem. I think there is product market fit there in that business.
Sir, just on the $150 million loan, right, in case, hypothetically, if we assume that Zomato will acquire Blinkit at a future point in time, will this loan be converted into equity or is this will still remain like an inter-related party loan? Any thoughts on that front?
That should be irrelevant, I think. I mean, hypothetically, if we acquire a business, it's a subsidiary. So whether we convert it into equity or not should not matter unless I'm missing something here.
It is relevant, right? It matters especially when there is dilution for the minority shareholders. But okay, my final question is.
I think that the debt is in the subsidiary, right? The dilution will not be at Zomato level.
Sure. And one last small clarification: your DRHP calls out an average monthly frequency of over 3 times by users on your platform. Sometime back, I heard you mentioning annual ordering frequency of 10 times a year. Where exactly is the disconnect?
That is true. So that's the whole point, that every customer is not ordering every month. So there are people today who order maybe once in 2 months, so they're active on our platform. And maybe different set of customers are ordering 3 times a month. So that is why we have a 15 million customer base who's ordering every month and a 53 million customer base which is ordering every year.
So you mean to say that the 15 million cohort, the average monthly ordering frequency is 3 times, and when you look at it, a superset of 50 plus million.
No, that's not what I'm saying. So I'm saying that 15 million could be different customers in different months. So it's not a cohort within the 50 million cohort who's ordering 3 times. Right. So if you are ordering in a month and not ordering in the next month, you get counted in the 15 million for the first month, but not for the second month.
Thank you, Mr. Guntupalli. May we request that you return to the question queue for follow-up questions. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Aditya Suresh from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Hey, thank you for the opportunity. So I had two questions. So first is in the contribution margin section, you mentioned long-term. Can you help qualify that for us? Is it 10 years, 20 years? Any comments on that?
I think in our head, definitely not. 10 years, I think it should be lower than that.
Okay, thank you. I guess the second piece is on the high-frequency transactors which you used to disclose, right? And I thought that was a fantastic metric which helped kind of understand the business. Last quarter was at 1.8 million. Any update on that?
So that wasn't quarterly, Aditya. We actually disclosed a number on a yearly basis for CY21. And the idea of that disclosing that metric was to showcase that it's a small fraction of people who are ordering once a week today, and that number should grow from where that is today. So we're not planning to disclose that number every quarter, but maybe once in a while, with reasonable frequency, we can share an update so that we know how that is progressing.
Thanks. And maybe just a final piece was on the delivery partner order intensity. Right? So you mentioned that we're slightly north of one. Any targets you have in mind over the next, say, 3-5 years? And what are the specific steps you're taking to kind of achieve that higher efficiency intensity, therefore to drive kind of delivery charges lower? And kind of is this kind of where the quick commerce piece kind of fits in terms of driving your delivery partner order efficiency?
Yes, so I think quick commerce will definitely add to that. But I think even without that, there is a large room there for us right now to improve. And essentially, it's a function of reducing the idle time of delivery partners on our platform, right? And as long as they're all occupied all the time that they're logged into our system, we would end up decreasing the overall cost of delivery while at the same time making sure that they make more money every hour. So I think fundamentally that's the principle. And yes, as we plug more use cases into that, like quick commerce, it's only going to get better.
Thank you, Mr. Suresh. May we request that you return to the question queue for follow-up questions. We'll take the next question from the line of Gaurav Rateria from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. So the first question is on multiple levers on unit economics that you talked about, commission rates, delivery fee, ad sales, delivery cost, what stage of journey these initiatives are? Some probably will fructify much earlier in the next 1 or 2 quarters. Some will take a little bit of a medium-term view to fructify. And what is the risk that competition, kind of toes the line or they don't toe the line? Because some of these initiatives, success of this, will be function of how competition behaves. So what's your take on that?
Hi, Gaurav. So look, I think competition is not the only factor. I think we are a three-sided marketplace, right? And any imbalance in this marketplace makes the marketplace degrade very rapidly, right? So it's important, therefore, that as we push along on our unit economics journey, we do it in a sustainable manner. And hence, if our stakeholders like restaurant partners or delivery partners or customers, for example, are not seeing enough value in what we are offering to them, even without the competition, I think the marketplace will degrade. Right. So it's a very fine balance that we have to run with, and there are multiple variables, as you rightly said, which makes it very complicated to do this in a very linear way across each of these 5-6 levers, right? And that's why we want to stick to contribution as a metric and retain the flexibility of, playing with the, going up or down with individual elements. Our aim is to make sure that we improve on contribution from here on every quarter without necessarily doing that for each of these specific individual levers. I mean, I hope I answered
the question, Gaurav. Yeah, this is fair. Got it. The second question is around trying to understand the synergies between quick commerce and food delivery, both from an operation side as well as from a customer acquisition side, given that they both are operating as or they might operate as independent businesses. So how should one think about a synergy both on operation and customer acquisition side?
See, separate businesses is from a customer lens, right? I mean, if we do go ahead with 2 separate brands, then consumers think of it as 2 separate businesses. But behind the scenes, it is an integrated tech, it is an integrated CRM, it is an integrated delivery fleet. And I think that is where the synergies will come, both on customer side, where we have a large customer base on food delivery, whom we can cross-sell with commerce and vice versa. And likewise on the delivery fleet side, operation side, which we just discussed, where the cost of delivery should come down because of higher utilization and efficiency.
Yeah, sorry to belabor on this point, but if I look at the delivery architecture for a quick commerce, it's from one point to multiple points of customers in a locality, whereas for food delivery, the delivery partners have to toggle between multiple restaurants at multiple locations. And then they have to deliver at multiple different endpoints, right? So the delivery architecture looks very different. So does the integrated delivery architecture really work well? I'm not sure if my understanding may not be correct.
So Gaurav, this could be the situation today. I think of it this way, that in a slightly more mature market on both quick commerce and food delivery, delivery partner's job is to pick up something from point A and deliver it to point B. Right, and if whether that point A is a dark store or a restaurant will eventually not matter that much, in a mature market. So, these models therefore may start off differently, because we want to get to scale, we want to get to SOPs which drive consistency in services and so on. But over time, I think the real value of the business will unlock once we integrate all of this in a fashion which makes it really fungible from a delivery fleet perspective.
Got it. Last question. You had also taken an NBFC license, probably to do some activity around the fintech side. So if you can elaborate on what exactly you're looking to do there, and will it be a capital intensive business? Typically NBFCs are capital intensive businesses, and that's the reason. Want to understand a little bit more clarity on what you're planning to do there. Thank you.
Yeah, Varo, so we haven't taken a license yet. I mean, we applied for it, and getting a license is a process in itself. So, when we get it, we would see on how exactly. See, the fundamental idea is to not build that as a separate business right now. I don't think we're going to deploy meaningful capital in lending as a business, but to just that NBFC to be an enabler for the growth of our restaurant ecosystem or delivery partner ecosystem. If we do see a way of doing that, you know, without risking meaningful capital. So that's how we think about it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ashwin Mehta from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. Just one question in terms of the dining out business. From a product refresh perspective, what are you looking to do in terms of this business? And from a longer term perspective, this was what your original business was. So from a longer term perspective, how do you scale up, see scale up in terms of this business? Because this, from a profitability perspective, should be additive to your business.
Yeah, hi Ashwin, good to hear from you. So I think we can't share more details. This is, I mean, we should wait for the new product here. Don't want to say anything beyond that. But you're right. I mean, this has been a business which used to feed some of our losses in food delivery a few years ago. And, you know, I think we know how to build this business better. Context has changed in the last 2-3 years, and hence we think this side of the product needs a rethink, and we're on, you know, on to doing that right now. And once we have an update, we'll share it with you.
And just one more question in terms of, say, your top 300 cities contribute almost 99% of your GOV. But in terms of indicators for how the remaining 700 or at least the 400 that we added earlier, how are things panning out there? Are we having to say subsidize delivery or spend materially in terms of discounting there to entice people?
Ashwin, most of these new additions are few weeks old right now, right? I mean, of the first 500 that we launched, we exited some cities. And the balance contribute pretty much, I mean, broadly to 99% of the business. The last 500 are cities that we launched post-October 2021. So, and some of them have been launched as recently as last couple of months. So very early right now, but I think I explained our thought process behind how we look at city expansion and what we watch out for, and hopefully sort of that answers the question that you have here. Happy to repeat that in case you missed that.
No, I'll kind of look up on that if I missed it. Just one follow-up in terms of Hyperpure business and how does it fit in with your quick commerce strategy? Because one of the ways to make quick commerce profitable would be how you do the fresh supplies piece, and that's where Hyperpure could kind of come in. So how are you thinking on those lines?
Yeah, Ashwin, I wished you did not ask that question because yeah, that's one of the elements of synergy in our business, which is not very obvious, but it's going to be a big driver of better economics for us because Hyperpure is a business that we built now over the last 4 or 5 years. It's become meaningful in size and growing well. So yeah, I think there are synergies there, which is what also excites us and gives us confidence about the economics of the quick commerce business as and when we get into it.
Okay, fair enough, Ashant. Thanks and all the best.
All the best. Thank you, Ashwin.
Thank you. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, due to time constraint, we will be able to take last two questions. The next question is from the line of Pranav Kshatriya from Edelweiss. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the opportunity. I have two questions. Firstly, can you elaborate the... Hello?
Yeah, Pranav, hi, go ahead. Can hear you.
Yeah. So can you please elaborate, you know, this quarter's increase in contribution margin, how much impact that the delivery cost reduction has happened? And, you know, is clubbing deliveries, you know, has been a major driver of that is what I'm trying to understand.
So first part, Pranav, we cannot answer. We don't want to share that. I think that it's fine detail. And To your second question, we're not looking at batching orders as a big driver of our delivery cost going down, at least for now. I think in our minds, it results in a inferior customer experience, and there are enough lower hanging fruits to bring the delivery cost down at this point, rather than starting to batch orders. So batching is a small percentage of our orders today, and we don't see that changing right now.
Sure. And my second question is regarding the loan which has been given to Blinkit. So it Blinkit seems to be burning a lot of cash, and you have extended the loan for the immediate capital requirement. Qualitatively, if you can answer if they will require funding in a shorter term, or this will help them tide over for a much longer period. And has the burn that sort of came down from when you funded them last time around? That is what I'm trying to understand.
Yes, Pranav, so I think the losses are coming down. We've indicated that in our letter, and I think they're well capitalized for the foreseeable future.
Okay, thank you. That's it from my side. Wish you all the very best.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Varun Ahuja from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. I think most of my question has been answered, but I'll just take one question on the grocery side. I just want to understand the thought process of putting this 400 million number there. I know you mentioned there are a lot of uncertainties that are involved right now, and looks like it's a core business that you think as of now, because all synergies you're talking about. So my understanding looks like, given it's such a huge opportunity, the losses or the investments may be a lot more higher than 400 million. Is it why are you constraining yourself with 2 years, 400 million? Is there anything as in your business model? How did you arrive? Anything that you can share on that front? Thank you.
So Varun, we think that's a lot of money for doing a business. Actually, we are not starting this business from scratch, right? I think the answer would have been different if we were to be a new business doing quick commerce, but we already have a business that is synergistic to quick commerce. We are a team that has gone through one cycle of building a business similar to that, right? I think that drives our thinking in terms of how much capital that we would need going from here, given what we know, and also knowing that competitive intensity is actually going to come down from where we are today. I think given the markets and how they've changed in the last 6 months, we don't think we are in a scenario had we been in the same environment as 2021 in terms of capital markets, we could have seen 3-4 more quick commerce startups getting funded, which would have made the environment way more competitive than what it is today. So on the competitive intensity bit, we are actually happier than what we were 5-6 months ago. It's come down, and that also drives how we think about losses going forward. This current market environment gives us a good window to actually scale this business quickly without really spending too much capital.
So given the model that you are looking at, obviously at the outset, given you are working, you may have a lot more detailed working. If you have to build dark stores in each and every place, and obviously looking at 15-20 minutes, at the outset, looks like the investments will be a lot more, and obviously then to acquire customers. So that's where the question is coming from. I understand you already have a business, but in terms of operating a dark store, maybe require a little bit more physical presence.
Sure, Varun. So let's discuss it. Once we get into this business, we can hopefully share more details with you at that point.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Swapnil from JM Financial. Please go ahead.
Hey, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. So I had a couple of questions, actually. So your employee cost ex of ESOP has seen a sequential decline. So just wanted to know if you had done some retrenchment over there. And can you also give some sense on your current headcount, and will you need to add going ahead as we continue to scale up?
Yeah, so no headcount reduction, Swapnil. And we're not seeing any pressure on the employee cost. As I said, I think we don't plan to hire meaningfully from here on, and the cost, employee cost in general, should grow with inflation from today.
Okay, but any particular reason why the sequentially the cost were down by around 7-8%?
Let me check that. Which number are you referring to on employee cost? I don't think the cost.
Employee cost ex of ESOPs. So it was 195 crores last quarter, and this quarter it is 181 crores.
Okay, so Apni, let me get back to you on this. I'm not very clear on the question, so maybe you can connect offline and I can give you a clarification. But in general, I would say that cost is stable, so there could be some understanding gap here which I can fix separately.
Sure. No worries. The second question, you have mentioned that growth in your business in the past has not been linear. So can you give some sense on seasonality? How should we look at it? I would presume that IPL is something good season for you, but apart from for the rest of the quarters?
Yeah, so the lumpiness in growth is, I think, partly because of seasonality, but largely it's been because of, I think, more larger macro factors and also the nature of industry and the stage of the industry, I would say, or the category. So I think it's been driven more because of that, where we saw intense period of competition in food delivery, and then that was consolidation, right? So I think the lumpiness was driven largely because of that in the past. There is some seasonality, but it's in our business, but not something. I mean, given our growth rates, we typically, that gets sort of overshadowed with the strong growth that we see quarter on quarter. So nothing much to add there.
Okay. And just one last question. In the P&L, there is a mention of delivery and related charges. So can you explain how this is different from availability fees that we used to report it, at the time of the IPO?
So this is essentially all, this is payments or rather the payouts that happen to delivery partners net of the customer delivery charges that we get.
Yeah. Okay, so is it you basically mean this is the same as the availability fees which was at the time of?
That's
correct. Okay. Thanks a lot for the answering my questions. Yes.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. We will now conclude this conference call. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.